Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Debbie Guy-Gish, the original revenue marketer, and welcome to WRMR Power Talk Radio for Revenue Marketing Leaders. So we meet a couple of times a month, and what we really want to focus on is an executive-level discussion on how marketing is changing from being a cost center to a revenue center. Now, I've been in this business since 2004. I bought my first marketing automation system in 2004. It was Eloqua because, of course, at the time, Eloqua was the only thing on the market. And then began working with my partner, Jeff Pedowitz, in 2007 as part of the Pedowitz Group. And I remember back in the early days, I would do all the speaking, and I would ask people, how many people here are responsible for revenue? And I'd only get a few hands that go up. And now it's, well, of course we're responsible for revenue. Yet, as marketing is making that transition from being a cost center to a revenue center, still less than 30% of CMOs are actually able to report ROI and revenue-focused numbers. So this show is really about the leadership that it takes to transform marketing from being a cost center to a revenue center. And I think there's a lot of great educational content in the market, but I think it's more operational in aspect. And we really want to focus on what it takes to be a leader and the things that leaders have to lead in this time of extraordinary change. So I invite guests on the show to discuss topics related to how to lead change in a B2B marketing world, and then to talk about those specific elements of change, including strategy, people, process, technology, that customer focus, and of course, results. Now, this week's show is called The Skinny on ABM or Account-Based Marketing. And it is marketing's most recent bright and shiny toy, and it's one of the hottest topics in marketing today. There is a lot of buzz about ABM because it's driven by some what I call very cool new technologies and by the ever-increasing need for marketing to demonstrate business value. But what does it really take for an ABM program to be successful, and is it really just about the technology? Today, with our guest and ABM expert, Lena Shaw, Director of Marketing Growth at Lead Genius, we'll explore the five key steps to building an ABM practice and the three benefits of a successful program. So before we begin chatting with Lena, let me tell you just a little bit about her. Now, I feel like I've known Lena forever, although we met first time face-to-face and had a discussion at the Flip My Funnel conference in Atlanta last year. And I tell you, I was immediately drawn to her expertise and just her pure joy with all things marketing. Lena has an incredible background in digital marketing, social media, and of course, ABM. She is a thought leader and visionary in our field, and I'm so pleased to have her on the show. Lena, welcome.
Thank you so much, Debbie, for having me on the show, and I, too, was drawn to your energy out in Atlanta, so thank you for having me.
And that was a great conference, and the conference was really all about account-based marketing, and we had a lot of great case studies. But let's begin by, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, the genesis of your title, and a little bit about Lead Genius.
Sure. Well, I guess, you know, for me, my background begins with, I have a fascination. I've always had a fascination for people, technology, and, well, I guess you could say it, earning money. And I feel there were probably two moments earlier in my career that led to me becoming what you would define as a revenue marketer today. It started senior year, going into my summer before college, freshman year of college. And I was the one sitting in strangers' houses selling knives and cutting pennies. And
was it those Ginso knives? Or?
Yeah, I absolutely sold Cutco. And the first time that I sold I think they were like $2,000 and up, $2,000 set of knives to a complete stranger, I realized, wow, that was invigorating. And But the moment that I didn't make that sale, I think that was the first moment where I realized, wow, there's something here. These people are the same and they didn't make a sale. So I think that was the first moment where I started to become fascinated with marketing. So after college, I got a degree in marketing. And once again, I still kind of had that fascination with inside sales, the hustle and bustle. So I started my years in inside sales. But then to move up in the startup world. And it paid off. I ended up getting my first marketing specialist job and, you know, at the bottom. And in that role, you know, there was a day where I got a little bored and I kind of reverted back to that inside sales side of me. And I started cold calling bloggers. Now at the time, you know, bloggers, social media, it was just, you know, coming to fruition. And one day I cold called and Robert Scoble picked up the phone. And at the time, he was backed by Fast Company. And the next week, I pitched him our, Leapfish was a, you know, aggregate search engine. Well, I pitched him our service. And then the next week, he's in our office doing a video interview for free with our CEO. And, you know, when that video published, Search UI done better than Google, it crashed our site. And that's when I realized, wow, for me, marketing and sales are one and the same. And I've always kind of approached, you know, marketing from that perspective. And that kind of led to, you know, where I'm at today. The reason why you see, you know, growth in my title, they wanted to say director of demand gen, but I feel like there's a lot more that goes into, you know, marketing, growth, working with product, working with sales. And let me do Lead Genius. And so Lead Genius, what we do here is we provide, you know, B2B marketing and sales teams with high quality contact and account data. And we also work with teams on their go-to-market strategies and provide those insights for them. But I would say at its core, it's about technology and people and helping people grow as well and companies grow as well.
So, Lynn, I want to go back to talking about your title, which is Director of Marketing and Growth. And I agree with you. What you do is beyond demand generation. And we're seeing more and more growth being part of marketers' title. You know, you've heard about growth hacking, and that's just basically marketing becoming the growth engine for an organization. And certainly with all the different technologies that marketers now have at their disposal and the changing role of the marketing organization in the company, you know, it should be about growth. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. Well, let's transition into ABM. And, you know, I want this episode really to focus on all things ABM, of course. And I really want to ascertain, you know, what's really going on in the ABM world and, you know, how do you do ABM? So why don't we begin by talking about your journey? When did you first hear about account-based marketing and how do you define it?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, account-based marketing, so working here at Lead Genius, we also help companies with their account-based strategies, given our approach to generating account and contact data. We kind of fell into that world. Well, for me, I see account-based marketing as it isn't different. It's account-based demand generation. I would say something really important around ABM is just intention. You're intentionally targeting and developing accounts, but you're still driving those people through the funnel in a deliberate way, and that is the demand generation. You can't do it without, you know, working with marketing and sales together and having that coordination, collaboration. But I don't see it as marketing. I don't see it as account-based marketing. I don't see it as account-based sales. I see it really as account-based demand generation, and that's where I've kind of stuck to.
I like that definition. It really is account-based demand generation. There's not a lot of mystery behind it. It's pretty actually straightforward. However, I have seen big changes happen between sales and marketing alignment and really marketing's understanding of what it takes to be in sales as a result of implementing ABM. So that's just kind of my perspective. But when you kind of step back from ABM, why do you think it's important and what do you think all the fuss is about?
Well, I'll start with the fuss, and then I'll get into why, you know, it's important. I think account-based marketing is the Nike of demand generation or is the Nike of acquisition. It's just this just-do-it mentality, and this has caused the fuss. And, you know, in my opinion, that's what's caused the fuss. And the technology now is giving you ways to just do it. But really, you need to take a step back and understand, really, what am I trying to do with this approach to demand generation? But that just do it mentality, I'm sure there's CEOs, you know, I've heard it, you know, internally, well, let's just run account-based marketing. Well, okay, well, what exactly do you mean by that? And really when you unpack it, the benefits around it, it really does have benefits, because why wouldn't you as a marketer or a sales team directly target who you would like to engage and close as a customer? If you have the means to do so, why not do it? But because there's so much technology and every blog post is telling you that you have to fit your needs into this, you know, into this framework, there's a lot of confusion and fuss around it. But the benefits really are, you know what you're getting, you know where you're, who you're targeting, what you're getting. It's easier to assess what is working or not. And then it drives that kind of that coordination and collaboration, you know, within your revenue team, because it kind of has to, because you're really, instead of, you know, really going out there one to many, you know exactly who you're going after. So you kind of have to have the buy-in across the board.
Yeah, I think that's a great synopsis of the benefits that marketers and actually sales organizations. And I love the just do it analogy. You know, ABM is the Nike of acquisition. I think that's such a great way to put it. And again, I think too often, if you think about the typical marketer, you know, marketers will not let something go until they think it's absolutely perfect. I think especially in B2B, we've really lost that sense of experimentation and iteration and continuous improvement. And so clearly account-based marketing is an area where you can do that fast experimentation and that iteration. So that's a great answer on what's important and what's all the fuss. So I know that, you know, when we talked in the pre-show, you had some very strong ideas around there's 5 steps to building a successful ABM program. And also I know from our discussion in the pre-show that you feel like people too often get tied into what they think they should do versus taking a more innovative approach to ABM. So why don't you share with us, in your experience, what are the 5 steps to building a successful ABM program?
Absolutely. So internally, we're in growth stage as well. And I feel a lot of the companies, a lot of the marketers, a lot of the sales development, you know, sales teams listening to podcasts like this, they're in a growth setting as well. They're not, you know, the Fortune 5 that, you know, they've figured out every single process and, you know, they can run this, you know, multifaceted, several layers within, you know, an account-based approach. So first, I would say the first step, well, this is a step before the step. And sorry if I'm irritating anybody,
it's
but stop
pre-step.
Reading every blog
post. So we're talking about the pre-step?
Yeah. So there's a pre-step of stop reading every blog post and first begin with, what are your business goals? So the first step is really, what are your business goals? If your business goals are to, for example, with us, we're moving up market and we want to drive, we want to build a repeatable process around selling into mid-market companies. You know, that's a challenge for everyone. Everyone's kind of figured out down market, the enterprise, but mid-market, there's a lot of opportunity there, but how do you do it in a repeatable way? And for us, it makes sense to do an account-based approach for this to move up market. So what are your business goals? Now, for example, going down market, you can still run an account-based strategy, but it's probably not going to be as the depth of that you're going into accounts. You might have SDRs reaching out to 3 to 5 contacts, whereas if you're moving up market, you might have, you know, SDRs, or you might be, you know, driving demand for whether, you know, 15 to 20 contacts and maybe less accounts going up market, but more accounts down market because you have more capacity to work those accounts. So I think it begins with, what are your business goals?
Okay. So are you saying that you see ABM as the best fit in growth companies?
I think now, because of the technology, because, you know, whether it's, you know, paid media, there's a lot of ways to drive, you know, paid demand at a cheap cost, whereas before it was, you know, it was really hard to do so. So I think you can do it across the board, but you really need to think about, okay, what are those key activities to drive that, to drive and hit your business goals?
Okay.
So I would say,
So the three steps is to really align business goals and make sure that ABM is going to be the kind of strategy that's going to help you achieve those business goals. And you're talking business goals, not marketing goals. And there's a big difference.
Business. The business goals.
Right.
Because your business goals, need to back in, and then next, you need to get buy-in from your CEO, your board. And in order to do that, you need to understand what they want. So if they have these business goals, and if the strategy matches those business goals, then you should be able to shift that mindset, because you really do need to shift that mindset. Kind of like the analogy I like to use is, you know, kind of like a birch box. You're not sure what you're going to get, but there's something, you know, there might be 3 to 5 things in there. You might like maybe 50% of the items, but it would be slightly cheaper than buying a box of items that you selected. But then you like 100% of those items in the box. So it's kind of taking that kind of a different approach of the value and the cost to drive one account versus not being able to target and having to work through, you know, maybe 100 leads to get to that one account. It's just like a completely different mindset. There's different KPIs.
Okay.
So really understanding and getting that buy-in is big. And we even went through those, you know, that process internally. And I think a lot of teams are going through that because it's easier for marketing to, you know, to begin the ABM process, this account-based demand gen. But you can't do it without the rest of the, you know, without that coordination across the funnel. So you really need to get everyone on board.
So I do want to focus for a minute more on the idea that you have to shift the mindset and you have to get that buy-in. You know, and I think part of the reason is that when you begin an ABM program, sales and marketing work closer together than they ever have before. And rather than drowning the sales organization in marketing qualified leads or leads, you're now focused on quality. And that can be a big mindset shift for an organization to go through. Is that what you've seen, Lena?
Oh, absolutely. I like to use that. Well, you know, you want your cake and eat it too, which is you really have to, you're used to the MQLs and kind of that cost per lead. And you can't have that same mentality in an account-based approach because your cost per lead is going to be much higher, but that potential return is much higher. So it's, you know, kind of teaching and having that patience to see, well, you've gotten used to this very, well, $150, for example, for a cost per lead versus, I don't know, $900 for, you know, a, you know, engagement with a qualified contact that you want to, that you would like to close, a decision maker. So you really need to kind of spell it out. And the ways that I've done that is kind of creating, using money, using data, just using numbers, getting in a spreadsheet and saying, okay, well, if we connect the dots across the funnel, we should be able to get to, whether it's closed deals, that much faster and increase that velocity because we know exactly who we're going after, we know exactly what that message is, and we know what we're getting versus that kind of unknown where you're not sure what that, you know, that time frame looks like and how many, you know, that dealing with the frustration of moving through contacts that you're really not going to work, that aren't going to pan out for you. So it's more deliberate. Once again, it's like that intention. You're intentionally doing something, and then you're being very deliberate in moving these people through the funnel, whereas that it's not the same way if you're doing that volume and velocity. There's less, I would say, intention and deliberation along the way.
So of the 5 steps to building a successful ABM program, so far we have a pre-step, which is align to the business goals and make sure that ABM is going to be a tool that will help drive and achieve those business goals. And step one is then to get the buy-in that you need and help shift the mindset from what marketing used to do to the role that they'll now play as part of an account-based marketing team.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So what's step two?
So I'd say step two is first, you need to agree. I know generally I've seen a lot of blog posts and it's like, hey, then you start building a list. Now, you need to agree on who you're targeting. In a growth, especially in a growth environment, you may think you know exactly who that, you know, who that ideal customer is, but you really need to get it in a room and you really need to drill down. So for example, we're selling, into mid-market companies, and we specialize in companies, mid-market and enterprise companies that are selling into SMB. So they're selling into companies like ourselves with, in high growth settings, for example. We're working with eBay, and we've had a conversation, a blog post went out with Square, one of our customers. Well, you still need to drill in a little bit more, because that doesn't really tell you just everything. You need to know, you need to say, okay, well, what is that market size? Is it from 500 to 2,000 employees? And are there other indicators of the ideal customer? Is it they're hiring, or they have 80 salespeople or 100 salespeople? So you really need to get that buy-in around who are we targeting first and why, and then who are those personas within that target market that you're going to go after. You really need to have a conversation around that. I think even for us, and we even provide, we work with tons of clients, and we work on strategy with clients, but even for us, we had to, you know, go back to the drawing board several times, because, you know, there were still some outlier, you know, companies that were, you know, making it into the funnel. So really having that agreement around who you're going after.
So, well, it sounds like it's a logical step to take. I mean, if you're going to have an account-based marketing program, which is specificity, you have to agree on who you're going after. Why is that a problem?
You know, it's a problem because, and I would say, you know, in sales, and I'm glad that I started and I have that perceived understanding of inside sales, because on a day-to-day basis, you're really thinking, well, you know, I want to get that sale. And because, you know, that sale works that one time, maybe I'm going to try a company like that. It's difficult to kind of filter out the noise, because you can probably sell in a growth setting. You probably can sell to a lot of different customers for different reasons. But in an account-based approach, you really need to drill in and, like, zone in on that one sweet spot, so that you can really understand what is working and what isn't before you start layering in more and more, you know, activities and so forth. So I think it's just tricky. I think it's just behavior. It's just human behavior to kind of want to push the limit a little bit. And in this setting, you really want to narrow in.
So is the outcome of step two a list of target accounts?
No, not yet. I haven't even gotten
it. Okay, not yet. You're just agreeing on... You're agreeing on the sweet spot at this point. So we agree the sweet spot looks like this, and here are the characteristics. So that's step two.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think maybe working in this setting and working with clients, because we provide this service as well, we've seen that people start building their list and they think they have a clear understanding of what their ideal customer is. We start building the list and they really don't, and we have to go back to the drawing board because they're starting to realize, oh, wow, we're really not getting those conversions that we want. And this cost is so high, wait a minute, right? Because you don't want to have that knee-jerk reaction from your CEO or the board to say, well, this isn't the right strategy. So you really need to be very deliberate about, okay, really narrowing in and zoning in on that sweet spot. So really it's buy-in from the board, agreement on who that target market is, key personas, you know, whatever those attributes are that you feel will help you sell consistently into a company. Those are the first two steps. And I would say the third step is, okay, once you've figured that out, you know who you're going after, you have buy-in from the board, you know, buy-in from the board and your CEO, you know, you have that first step. Well, next is, okay, what are those key activities that you're going to use to drive demand at that profile? This is still before the list. I'm still before the list.
Now it's the key activities that would use to engage with the profile.
Yeah, because if you start with we haven't even gotten to the list yet. I know I've completely turned this on its head. I think the list comes very much at the end. It's not the most important. It is very important, but there's steps ahead of this that are far more important. And the reason why I go with defining those key activities, because, you know, those key activities are those points along the funnel that we need to make sure that we're being deliberate and we're executing at an optimal level, because we need to understand, once again, what is working and what isn't. And those key activities, whether it's, you know, we have paid media, if we know that we, in an account-based approach, if you have a smaller list, for example, you have to have a lot of content. So first we need to understand, first, what is the capacity and the key activities of our sales development team? That's going to be a, you know, big key to an account-based approach, or moving people through the funnel and, you know, doing outbound and engaging. And then that kind of backs into the list. So I really like to first think about what are those key activities we're going to start with, and then what is the capacity of our team to handle, what we can handle, and then you build the list after that to match that number, right, to match that capacity. If you start with the list first, the number of accounts you're going after may that volume may not be ideal for your strategy. So it's really figuring out, okay, what is your target? What are the key activities to build your demand strategy? And then you back your list into that.
I think that is excellent advice. Because, you know, once you have that list, everybody's going to, you know, go to the four wins and everybody's going to start doing stuff and it's probably not going to be coordinated. And the definition of account-based marketing is really focus. And so by taking these steps to first get the buy-in, second, agree on the persona or the sweet spot, right? And then number three, to define the key activities and the capacity to handle this, right? Because there's a lot of things that have to be done. And those are the things that you do before you create the list. I think that makes a lot of sense. But I have a question for you. If you were to guess, Lena, how many companies that are currently implementing an ABM strategy do you think follow this approach so far?
Well, given what I've seen, you know, companies coming in, I would say a very maybe 20% of companies are. I've seen everyone starts with the list first. That's basically what I've seen, and then you back those activities into that list. Like, okay, we're going to start with this list. We have this many people, and then we're going to go after that. We're going to try to engage that list using paid advertising and whatnot. And I think that's a big piece. I think that's a big breakdown between marketing and sales because, in an account-based approach, if you're running an account-based approach, some of those key activities that you start with, the levers that are easier to pull, probably doing some type of outbound email and, you know, paid advertising at the same time if you're trying to, you know, engage and drive velocity. So that coordination is very important. It's very, very important because it's very easy to increase the spend. But it's not easy to increase the capacity of the individual that you're handing off to. And that handoff is very important, in my opinion, that handoff to that next step. So.
I think you're absolutely right. And we're going to get to talking about how do you structure a team to handle ABM. And Lena, do you mind if we go a little bit longer on the interview today? Typically we go about 35 minutes, but are you okay staying on with us for a little while longer? Okay. All right.
Sure,
fantastic.
Sure.
So, all right. We got the pre-step is to define the business goals and make sure that ABM can alive and help drive those. Number one, get that buy-in and shift the mindset. Number two, agree on the sweet spot. Number three, align key activities and capacity to that sweet spot. Now is number four the list?
So now we get into so this is where you're building the actual demand strategy. So you're figuring out okay who you're going after, who you're targeting, and then how are you going to target them, and then how many people are you going to target. So the how many people you're going to target is where the list comes in. And it's not just the list, it's going to be how are you going to iterate on that list. I think there's another misconception with, account-based, once again, demand generation, that you have to have this list completely baked. And like you were saying earlier, Debbie, demand generation is an iterative approach. We can do this. That's what's great. That's what's fun about it. It's, you know, it can be scientific now. It's not this nebulous marketing world. You have the data. You have the technology to be very iterative. What we're doing internally is, okay, so we know that right now the capacity, we're roughly around 100 new accounts, you know, each month. So we kind of have this cohort approach. So each month we'll launch 100 new accounts and then we'll go back and we want to make sure we have touch points that we're going to hit every single month. We're going to hit every single account the same exact way every month. And then we'll go back and we'll iterate on, okay, what didn't work and apply that to our next cohort. But we're building this list as we go because, once again, you learn something new every day, every 3 months, every 6 months, you're learning more. You're selling into people that are learning more. So to sit here and say that you know exactly what this list is going to be, you know, 9 months from now, I think that's slightly ludicrous. And I feel that's where a lot of the breakdown happens. And
so ABM is also very opportunistic, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not a static effort. Like I will go after these five accounts and I will focus on nothing else. it's directionally the sweet spot where you're going, and then it's somebody, a company that at least has some kind of response. Would that be a fair assessment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I love the idea of that the list is never completely baked, and I think that's a kind of a far out concept, especially when marketing is working with the sales organization, because you know sales organizations, they get their top 20, right? And then their manager or their VP tells them, you go get business with that top 20, right? So I would imagine this is part of that mindset shift to say that as we're working with you in this account-based marketing program, you know, we've got a sweet spot and we're going to find the most likely candidates that we can spend our account-based marketing efforts to get you business. Mm-hmm. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, and that's where the fuzz comes in, because that's the kind of – that's if you have everything figured out. You have your repeatable process. You're probably, you know, a much larger company. But the fuzz isn't about those companies using these technologies. It's the companies that are growing. It's the companies that are trying to use these technologies and run a similar approach, this, you know, multifaceted and coordinated approach, kind of like these larger companies. But you have to do it in a different way. You can't do it in the same exact way because you have different goals. You have different business needs. You need to drive revenue. You need to be growing. It's not just, okay, well, you know, expanding within an account. There's this growth aspect, and that's why it's account-based demand generation that I like to say, because you need to combine. It's like a hybrid of that, you know, that approach that kind of lives in a that used to live in a setting that was, your business was more defined by that point. But now you're like, okay, well, why not? Why can't we do something like that? Why can't we go directly at the companies that we'd like to, but why can't we do it? We can do it now at scale because we still need to do it. We need to drive demand. And that's where I see
that makes that makes a lot of sense. In a growth organization, iterating that list is going to be all important. In a company that's been around for a long time, they've got it all figured out. They're not in a growth mode. You can take probably more a traditional approach to account-based marketing, and you'll still have a good result. What's step five, Lena?
Step five is, once again, so you know, account-based demand generation, you need to understand what's working or not. So you need to have your reporting. You need to have your KPIs. So KPIs, you know, once you have all those key activities, you know how you're going after, you know what, you know, those key activities for those accounts, you kind of have those benchmarks set out, and then those reporting, the report set up to assess, you know, the performance of your strategy. So, for example, you know, for us, we have everyone kind of has a piece. So we have paid marketing. There's benchmarks there for account lists. You know, field marketing, there's benchmarks there. And then sales development, there's benchmarks there. And we like to focus everything around, you know, tie it all together, right? This is, we're no longer marketing or sales. We're a revenue team. So we're trying to get meetings set and meetings attended. And we're iterating. So every month we have dashboards set up based on some of those high-level metrics. I think there's another area here in reporting that will slow people down. And even internally, I have to say, it's okay if we can't track everything. There's reporting analytics. This is why BI tools exist. It's not, you can't just do everything with one reporting tool. So we may not be able to track every single touch point immediately, but let's at least get that high level. What are these key benchmarks and key activities that we know we can track, and start, you know, assessing, you know, the performance that way. So really having your KPI set up, having benchmarks set up, and having accountability for every piece of that account-based demand strategy in line so that we can hit that goal. So I kind of set up, you know, KPIs to connect across the board. So
Let me ask you a question about that, and this is completely fascinating, and I agree. And just for our listeners, let me just review Lena's steps. She's got a pre-step, which is aligned to the business goals and make sure that ABM will be a strategy that can help achieve those goals. Step number one is buy-in and help shift the mindset to what account-based marketing is all about. Number two is not create the list. It is to agree on the sweet spot and the general target market. Number three is not the list. It is defining the demand generation activities that you'll be using to the sweet spot, right? And also figuring out capacity to handle the activities. Mm-hmm. Number four, you actually do get to the list. And but the list, once you get to it, doesn't even remain the same. You know, this list can be iterative because you're in a growth organization. And then number five, Lena tells us, is that it's really about KPIs, what is working and your benchmarks. So question for you, Lena. So all that sounds great. That sounds just great. And we see a lot of marketers really enchanted with this idea of account-based marketing. If where does a marketing team have to be in order to successfully implement account-based marketing? And what I mean by that, you know, you're familiar with my four stages of revenue marketing. You're either a traditional marketer, you're a lead, you know, a lead generation marketer, just using email, spraying and praying. You're a demand generation marketer where you're using some of these more sophisticated tools and you're aligning with sales, or you're a revenue marketer where you actually forecast the impact that you make. So in order for a marketing team to successfully say, we're going to do account-based marketing and do it successfully, where do they need to be on that journey prior to?
I absolutely think, and maybe this is just me because I consider myself a revenue marketer, but you know, anytime I'm interviewing and for our team, and I always bring up the fact that, you know, once again, we are not a cost center. We are, you know, we are a profit center. And I feel even, you know, our content marketing, you know, whether you're doing video, whether you're doing field marketing, you have to have that revenue marketing mindset. I try to get everyone on our team to a point where they own a budget, because when you own a budget, that's really that point where, oh, wait, okay, now I need to make sure I'm driving ROI. So, you know, Joe Payne, you've actually met on our team. He knows that he cannot drive ROI in field marketing without sales doing X, Y, and Z. But, you know, he has to be able to interface and have those conversations and, you know, work with sales to help him hit his goals as well. So you really have to step outside that box. We're all on the same floor. We have sales and marketing team meetings together. We have our go-to market, you know, meetings together. You know, this is really, you know, we're a revenue team. And I always see it, marketing, sales, customer success, we're all doing the same thing. We're all trying to get a customer to engage with us. We're just doing it all slightly different. Yeah.
So, Lena, it sounds like the marketing team needs to be fairly well progressed on that revenue marketing journey in order to embrace and successfully execute on account-based marketing strategy. You wouldn't go from, like, being a traditional marketer to, oh, let's jump into account-based marketing. Or you might, but they probably would not be applying it in the right way, and certainly not the way that we're talking about. So another question for you, because I've heard you mention a whole lot of different people as part of this process. So can you just generally describe for us the different roles that people play in an account-based marketing strategy and kind of what they do?
Yeah, I kind of break it. I try to keep things really simple. So I have two buckets. There's the – well, actually, here, I'll do three buckets. We have the role of making sure that you are driving the right customer with the right mentality. So that gets into product marketing, messaging, and positioning. And then once you have that customer, once you have them into the funnel, you need to make sure you're moving those people through to that opportunity stage. So that's kind of where the demand, like sales development, field marketing, you know, paid advertising. And then on the other side is, okay, once you have that opportunity, the other activities to get to a close and to expansion, so driving more revenue, and that's where, you know, more of the sales and customer success. So I think there's like kind of three areas, but really it's getting people, the right people into the funnel, moving to the opportunity stage, and then opportunity to, well, just going to keep making more money.
So how do you coordinate all those people? I mean, how do you begin an account-based marketing initiative and say, oh, guess what, product development people, look what we're doing. Oh, guess what, people who ran our old funnel, here's what we're doing. Oh, guess what, field sales or SDRs, here's what we're doing. How do you coordinate all that?
Yeah, so I mentioned we kind of have that go-to market meeting. So we have key stakeholders responsible for those different areas. So they have – and that's where the activities and defining those activities, because once you have those activities first and there's KPIs and benchmarks around that, then you can have like the individuals that are kind of running those areas. So, you know, might have someone from, you know, product marketing, field marketing, you know, operations, you know, sales development, you know, AE, And then we'll have product in to our go-to-market meeting maybe, you know, once a month so they can understand, okay, well, this is what we need now. We need the sales demo to be a little bit different. Or, hey, product marketing, we need sales enablement collateral once we get to that opportunity stage to answer this question. So it doesn't ever end. And it's really just, you know, that's where the business goals, the strategy, everyone's bought in around their activities. And then, you know, it makes that much easier, but it's really just getting people into a room and you're just constantly discussing it. And that's, we start our meeting, you know, every go-to-market meeting, we try to, you know, have that reporting dashboard. Okay, well, here's what we're running. You know, here's the activity on last month, you know, 100 accounts that we've engaged, what worked, what didn't, and let's keep moving. So
let me ask you this. Is there one throat to choke on ABM success? Who's ultimately responsible for ABM success?
Yeah, there's not one throat to choke. I think everyone, that's what's exciting about
shared.
It. Really,
okay.
It's a shared burden. Generally, the marketing kind of side helps lead it in the way because that's kind of where it starts. At the beginning of the funnel, we think in that more of that demand and iterative approach on, you know, long-term, whereas on the sales side, it's more of that day-to-day, but you absolutely need that day-to-day. You need those people on the front lines to tell you exactly what's happening at all times. So I don't think there's one throat to choke, but it does help having some, you know, key stakeholders and, you know, accountability for those areas of the process.
That is so interesting that it's a shared responsibility. That's very interesting. And it sounds like that's the way that it should be if you have a program that is working well. So, Lena, how important is the role of the sales development rep or the business development rep in an ABM program, and how does that work in your company?
I personally think this role is extremely critical. And, you know, this may not be for every company, but I'm not sure if you've noticed, but for example, marketing automation, that traditional way of doing lead nurturing, it just really isn't working that well. And, you know, emails are now going to spam. So that sales development representative, it's not only, okay, you can go out cold and, you know, begin that process, but it's that handoff to nurture that you in a very direct and deliberate way that you're not getting from just traditional like marketing automation anymore. But you still need that people. You need that people component to carry the torch, but they're still developing. We still need them to develop. So they're nurturing these contacts, these accounts, and driving engagement to get them to that point. I feel it adds, you know, operational efficiency to have a sales development rep in the process.
Where does the SDR team report to in your organization?
So the SDR team reports to right now. So we actually have it's kind of in between my team, so my org and sales, because we're bringing in more sales leadership. But they've been working very closely with the marketing team, because as you move up market, it's the coordination. So basically, if you kind of needed to define like what that SDR role is, you would probably 70% of that, if you're moving up market, because there's so many touch points, a lot of it is around the messaging, around the targeting and how you're developing. And maybe 20% is actually talking to someone on a phone call.
Okay.
So
does it report into, it's so funny, my windows just blew open in my office.
Yeah.
And I'm looking outside now, and there's this huge windstorm. So I'll shut the doors in a moment. But if I sound like I'm in a wind tunnel, that's what's just happened. But these SDRs, so do they report into marketing? Do they report into sales?
They're reporting into our CRO right now. I would say right now,
across
the board,
okay. It's
about 50-50. It's about 50-50.
Okay.
I've seen in our organization, we're probably making that. We'll see. But with our clients, we've seen,
So let me ask you this. One of the things that I've noticed is how a really great ABM program has a dramatic effect on improving the sales and marketing relationship, more than just about anything that I've ever seen. And I write a lot about the marketing and sales relationship. As a matter of fact, I'm doing a qualitative study right now. I'm going back to like my 110 different radio shows that I've done. And my last question is always, what advice would you have? And I'm betting that at least 75 or 80% of the advice includes to improve sales and marketing alignment. So in your experience, how does introducing an ABM program affect the marketing and sales relationship?
I think it's actually, it does. It forces, to do it successfully, it forces coordination, collaboration. And I guess I say coordination, collaboration because I've heard alignment a lot and it's becoming like this loaded term, but
it is. It's kind of meaningless now, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I hate that word too. Yep.
And that's where we, you know, that's why it was kind of difficult for me to answer that question from a sales development perspective of where they report to, because right now they report to the go-to market team right now. So like our demand function, so they're reporting to me a percentage of the time, and they're also reporting to, you know, sales percentage of the time while we're in this transition period. So it's really, where do you fit into that, you know, demand strategy and just focusing on that.
So how does ABM affect the marketing and sales relationship?
It helps it. It supports it.
Okay.
If you're doing it the right way. And that's why I feel you have to kind of be, since marketing is always kind of at the onset and the beginning, the initial stages of, you know, driving this, that's why you have to have that kind of revenue marketer or that demand gen marketer on your way to being a revenue marketer type of mentality, because it's very important that you understand the day-to-day pain of the sales team. And it's very important that the sales team understands how important it is to be consistent so that you can execute on an iterative strategy to help them in the long run. So it's kind of having that two-way understanding of what these roles go through on a day-to-day basis.
So I think that's an excellent observation. And so a follow-up question to that would be, quite often when marketing begins this revenue marketing journey, sales looks at them like they've just grown a second head. And part of it is because there's not a whole lot of credibility in marketing, especially if you say marketing and revenue in the same sentence. So marketing has really been relegated in many companies to the, you know, the pens and mugs department. And, you know, we know all about that. And even when marketing begins the revenue marketing journey and they've got the numbers and the facts to show that they are contributing to growth and revenue, there's still a disbelief on the part of the sales relationship. Have you found that having an effective ABM program increases sales thinking that marketing is a credible part of the business?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, even something like, you know, content marketing and how sales is now seeing that we, you know, like the team is creating content specific to what will help the sales development team in outbound, or what will help the sales team, you know, in conversation when they get to those expansion conversations. It's really, we're starting to see it. It's great. You know, I love it.
Okay.
The collaboration.
And I've seen that as well. I mean, it's almost like finally there's a tangible way that marketing can step up to the plate and have this real revenue conversation with the sales organization. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, Lena, clearly you know a lot about account-based marketing. You've been doing it for a while. You've had great success with it. You have some very, very keen insights that you've shared with us. But there's probably a lot of marketers listening to this podcast, and maybe they're just thinking about their ABM journey. So what advice would you give to marketers who are just beginning their ABM journey?
I know it sounds trivial, but just keep it simple. I would limit it to maybe one to two key activities that you've seen on the spectrum of all these activities that you could do in an account-based approach. Keep your list, you know, small and be iterative. Don't fall into the trap of wanting to just build this list and kind of forgetting about, oh, wait, what are all these other key areas that we need to make sure, you know, will work out across the way, you know, within that journey. So I would say just keep it simple, start small, and iterate, and yeah.
I think that's great advice, Lena. I really do. And so, you know, really great insight on the five steps. So let me go through them with our listeners again. Number one, there's a pre-step, and that's take a look at the business goals of the organization, align to those as a marketing organization, and make sure that ABM is a strategy that will help drive those business goals. Step number one is really to get buy-in and help shift the mindset, because you're really moving from lots and lots of MQLs to a very, very targeted approach, and that does take a mindset shift. Number two is not the list, as we talked about before. It's really defining the sweet spot, the target market. Who are you going after in a broad sense? And step number three, again, not the list, is what are the key demand generation activities that will engage that target market in the sweet spot, and what's your capacity to handle that? So I think those are two very key things to know about. The list comes next, and you know, the one thing about the list is it's not a static list. It's an iterative list, which I thought was a great piece of advice. And then finally, KPIs. So to your point, Lena, constantly iterate, you know, what is working, what is not working, keep on doing what's working, and change what's not working. So any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listening audience on ABM?
It's okay. You will make mistakes, but it, you know, everyone does. No one has it completely figured out, and that's what's fun about being a revenue marketer. Be okay with maybe one approach not working or one message not working, but you know, you'll get it over time. And even for us, we're still learning, we're still growing. And we work with clients every
day. I think that's so true. Don't be frozen by perfection. Just begin and get some things done. Lena, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for sharing all of your insights about account-based marketing, what works and what doesn't. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, and thank you for all of your listeners, you know, carrying on the revenue marketing message.
Woohoo! Absolutely. Yeah. So for all of our listeners, thank you for being with us today. You can get copies of this broadcast at Blog Talk Radio, Revenue Marketer Radio. You can download from iTunes, or you can listen from the Pedowitz Group Facebook page. So thanks, everybody. And remember, it is a great day to be a revenue marketer, and we will see you next time.